Welcome to Life Quest Liberty, live in-depth conversations with today's top writers, editors, and spiritual leaders concerning religious freedom around the world. On today's broadcast, we'll examine local and international factors that may be impacting your right to worship and obey God as your conscience dictates. I'm your Life Quest Liberty host, Charles Mills. Today we head to the far side of the world, to a country challenged by those who desire religious freedom and those who oppose it. This battle reaches to the highest levels of government. Lincoln Steed, editor of Liberty Magazine, is on the line with us to talk about Burma. Lincoln, share with us what we need to know.
Well, we need to know there is no Burma anymore, if you believe the rulers of that little, rather retiring country.
Yes.
It's called by the military rulers Myanmar. Sort of a made-up name.
Yeah.
And historically, it was known as Burma, certainly under the British before World War II and for years after. But it's had a real problem with civil and religious liberties under the military rule.
Yes.
And it runs a little bit against what people might imagine of such a country, because this is a Buddhist-majority country. And usually Buddhism is fairly, maybe passive is the wrong word, but not confrontational, not revolutionary. But the military rulers took over there. They allowed Buddhism to continue, but have been very politically repressive and have accelerated a societal antagonism to religious minorities. That, of course, has meant many Christians, such as Seventh-day Adventists, are under a shadow. And in particular, I've noticed even the UN and Secretary of State John Kerry has mentioned recently the case of the Rohingyas.
Mm.
These are a Muslim minority in the north of Burma that are just so ostracized legally and socially and really mistreated in every way you can imagine, physically, marginalized in society, denied education, clustered together in refugee camps where they're mistreated. It's a very sad situation, and in no way have they been implicated in any of the terrorist-type violence of radical Muslims in some other parts of the world. It's purely because they're the religious other, a lower socioeconomic class, and they've been kept there by policies and just grossly mistreated.
Mm. Now, you were there recently, I understand. You were in country.
Yeah, a few years ago.
Tell us about that visit.
Well, it was wonderful for me because I'm an Australian, and I grew up hearing the tales of an Australian missionary to Burma, Eric B. Hare.
Oh, yes. Oh,
there were recordings and stories that I'll never forget them. You know, like the story of the little boy who went out disobedient. It was always, these stories are always about little disobedient boys.
Yes, even a chicken, Pip-Pip.
Yeah, right. You remember Pip-Pip?
Oh,
yeah,
yes.
That was from Burma. The naughty chicken that went outside and Mr. Hiss ate him.
Yes, that's Mr. Hiss the snake.
Yeah, and then there was a little boy that disobediently went outside and an elephant gored him in the side,
yes,
as it was rampaging through the gardens.
Yes.
So, you know, I wanted to see the legacy and the fable land of Burma that this missionary and others had gone to. And I found elements of that because, like a lot of repressive, either dictatorial or communist regimes, they tend to freeze history when they take control.
Mm.
Visibly, it's almost like the British, well, not just left, but everything stayed as they left and then started crumbling.
Mm-hmm.
You could see the colonial infrastructure. And I could easily imagine missionaries working with the people in a very interesting culture. Again, celebrated by Rudyard Kipling, you know, come ye back to Mandalay,
yes, yes,
ye British soldiers.
Yes,
that was another place in Burma. So I appreciated it. But at the same time, we could see great signs of oppression. I remember going past the little island downtown where there was a house in the middle of quite a huge pond.
Mm-hmm.
Where there was this little island in the middle, and that was the house of Aung San Ki. I think I've got her name slightly wrong, but she was the daughter of the celebrated nationalist and the natural heir to ruling the country. But the military had put her in jail following some of her electoral victories, and she was there for many, many years under house arrest.
Mm-hmm.
And at the moment, this is one of the reasons that I wanted to talk about this today, there are elections coming up in Burma, and it appears inevitable that Sun Ki and her political party will win, and she likely will be the first president, or whatever they call the head of state from here on out, of a relatively free country, because the military are being forced to pull back.
Hmm. And that will do what for religious freedom in that country? What do you see happening?
Well, we will see. We will see. I was there on a National Day of Independence, is the best way to put it, when we were there, and it was a lot of there were a lot of bands and celebrations and so on. And I noted that on the corner, directly across from our Seventh-day Adventist Church headquarters, there was a large platoon of soldiers. And I asked, and I found out that there was some incident many, many years ago, and so the military regard our church and many others too with great suspicion from the point of being a threat to the very existence of their regime. Mm-hmm. So I would think and hope that some of this political antagonism to all religions other than Buddhism will diminish, because Aung San Suu Kyi is English educated, I believe. She certainly speaks with a very distinct English accent and is very Western looking compared to the regime, certainly. We had a meeting with all the religious leaders other than Buddhism, the Protestants and evangelicals and even the Catholics. Mm-hmm. And it was a very happy and yet sad occasion, because we heard many stories throughout the country of marginalization and outright persecution, and they were a suffering group. The net effect was that evangelization is being greatly restricted. So I think any change, and this is a politically liberalizing change, clearly will be an advantage to religious liberty generally.
You need to clear something up here for me, Lincoln. I don't understand. You have a country where there are armed guards carrying guns, afraid of a group of people, unarmed, pacifist, who are coming together to meet in a church to pray and sing. Now, okay, we've got the Crusades. I understand that. Those were different kinds of Christians. But how can a country be so afraid of a group of people sitting in a church with Bibles in their laps?
Well, on one level, you and I know, and I think many of our listeners know, that it seems like negative, at times outright evil forces, they are intimidated by the moral power of truth and of faith. Mm-hmm. Then you add to that, in a country like Burma and others, you know, there's the burden of history.
Yes.
And they will equate Christianity, certainly, with English and foreign influence, and they often fear, and sometimes with some justification, that elements within that group are really working against their political interests, which is another argument of why, no matter what country we're in, I believe Christians and people of faith should keep church and state separate.
Yes.
Don't give cause for them to think that a religion which is wanting to change hearts and lives has an agenda to directly change the political order. Mm-hmm. That may be a consequence of changed minds, but we shouldn't be, in essence, a vanguard for foreign powers.
So what I hear you saying is that the government there, the military government, is concerned over the historical elements of Christianity. The historical elements and the national elements, where they came from originally, who was over them before. Christians to them represent a government or a governance that they don't want.
Foreign intrusion, absolutely. And party to that is also a long-term secessionist movement that exists in the north of this country with the Karen, who many of them are Christians nominally, even though they don't always act that way. But there's a Christian influence and a great sympathy in the West for their cause. And they've been in a secessionist revolutionary movement against the central government for decades. And what further muddies it, what fuels this secessionist movement are drug sales. This is a lot of opium and other sales there. So, the geopolitical thing gets very complicated, and then when religion gets fed in, it creates further animosities and hazard for people of faith, not just the ones that are directly involved.
I think that some people or some peoples are using religion as a shield or some kind of a shelter to hide in as they do very unreligious, very unchristian things. Would I be right in saying that?
Absolutely, absolutely. And of course, then these tribes, people that are not thoroughly Christianized, horrible things happen. At one point, there were two boys that led the armies. They were mystics and, I would say, basically spirit-possessed, but they were leading the Christian army. They were like oracles that everything they said, they felt that the spirits were speaking through them. So a lot of superstition running alongside nominal Christianity. And this is a poor witness when that happens to, in this case, their antagonists, who were Buddhists and had a political agenda, and they look at this sort of craziness, and that's Christianity to them. Mm-hmm. So there's a greater need than ever before, obviously, for people of faith to accurately and consistently represent their faith wherever they are.
And there always has been those people existing, but of course they are overshadowed many times by the gun-toting Christian, the Christian that goes in and does all kinds of evil things in the name of Christ. I'm beginning to understand now, because we can broaden this away from Burma to include much of the world today, and much of the attitudes that people have against Christianity itself. It's more than I don't like your God or I don't like the way you worship.
Absolutely.
It's I don't like the country you come from. I don't like the morals that you show in that country. I don't like the history that you're dragging behind you. All of these things are carried in the arms of Christians today. Am I right?
Absolutely. And of course, that's why we're having programs like this.
Yes.
Not too many of our listeners have direct knowledge of Myanmar or are likely to go there, but we can draw lessons from that. And of course, in this war on terrorism, we need to understand, while the separation of church and state in America, and it's more secular than it should be, many of our antagonists and those terrorists themselves, they see this as Christianity, what we are part of, and all the things that are done here is representing Christianity. You know, the gross immorality, dishonesty, violence, and all the rest. And we need to do, again, all that we can through our personal life and witness to counteract that negative influence.
And would we be better served if we had the same attitude when we look at others, like the Muslims, the other people that aren't like us? We need to let go of the history. We need to let go of the preconceptions and see exactly what they're talking about and exactly the purity of their religion as they interact with us. Is that a good thing for us to do?
Well, I wouldn't quite put it that way, but knowledge is power. Mm. We should have knowledge about other people, not prejudice or supposition. Mm. Often history does explain a reason why you should be cautious.
Yes.
And past actions will speak to the likelihood of present actions. But I think we should emphasize our common humanity first, relate to people as other people, other than prejudicial boxing them in as just an ultimatum of some belief system.
Yes.
But we should know the different belief systems, understand them. Otherwise, you get all sorts of, like I say, with those two mystics that were passing as Christian leaders, you would know. While you might not know everything about that, you'd know inherently, well, that's not really Christianity. There's some aberrant form we're facing here.
Mm-hmm. www.libertymagazine.org is the website for Liberty Magazine. Read the issues, listen to these programs, read Lincoln Steed's blogs, and he has a video blog going on now. Excellent stuff. So I want you to just go there, libertymagazine.org. Lincoln, thank you so much for being with us today. Appreciate it.
It's my pleasure.
And listener, until next time, this is Charles Mills along with Lincoln Steed, editor of Liberty Magazine, inviting you to rest in the freedom of God's love. Goodbye, everyone. If you'd like more information about LifeQuest Liberty, call Three Angels Broadcasting Network at 618-627-4651 or email us through our website at 3abn.org. Join us again next week at this same time as we examine more of the threats and challenges facing your religious freedom. May God keep the flames of liberty burning in your heart today.